Now, I told some of y'all that we were going to talk about witches after a while, so I said the word witches already. So it's been talked about. So if I don't quite get there, I said witches. We are in Samuel, 1 Samuel. And I'm at the blue bookmark. If you got you one, that's where you're at. Chapter number 27. There's my mark. See it? Now, David said in his heart, talking to himself, thinking about things to himself, pondering over what Saul's been doing, coming after him over and over and over again. And he says to himself in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. Now, he's already got a promise from God he's going to be the king. That's kind of like he went into a little bout of depression there, saying, you know what? I may have to take matters into my own hands a little bit, because this Saul's just going to keep coming and coming, and one of these days I'm going to slip up and he's going to get me. So David's having a little bout here, and he says, there is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall despair of me and seek me any more in the coast of Israel, so shall I escape out of the land. And we've got to figure now, if Saul went into the land of the Philistines after David, naturally all the dukes and lords of the Philistines would have said, Saul is attacking us. And so they wouldn't say, well, we'll step out of the side and let you go run David down. But they would have said, this is all out war. Saul and his army has entered into our land. So Saul says, so we don't have an all-out war, and it don't matter how bad I don't want David to be king, for me to go into the land of the Philistines would be a wrong move. And so David may have a little good sense here, because he's saying, maybe I'll have to fight with the Philistines a little bit here and there or whatever, but I don't have to keep worrying about Saul, because he's not going to chase me over here into the land of the Philistines, because that would be all-out war. And Saul is already afraid. Saul's already scared. Saul's already got this evil spirit telling him he's going to die. He don't want all that war, because every time he goes, each time, if you've noticed, every time he's went into battle here lately, he's more and more worried about not making it. God has departed from him, as we're going to find in the next chapter. God has left him. And so if God has left you, that ain't the time you want to go start no war with nobody. Then it says, and David rose and he passed over with 600 men. In other words, David ain't lost a man yet. All these little skirmishes and all these little battles and all the little things, he still got 600 men with him. Well, 600 men that were with him, and he went unto Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. And it says he went to the king, and last time he saw this man, he had to act mad and crazy, and the king says, what would I have to do with this crazy man? I don't want him. But this time he comes to him, and undoubtedly the king sees a little bit better perspective of him, and he says, and David dwelt with Achish at Gath. He and his men, every man with his household, even David and his two wives, Ahinoam, the Jezreelite, and Abigail, the Carmelite, Nabal's wife. So all of them brought their houses, they brought their families, they brought their stuff. They all crossed over into the land of the Philistines, and as it looks like, they were all staying right there at the city where Achish was, for a little while anyways, at first. And so they're all piled up there, and Achish has given him favor, Achish has given him responsibilities, and Achish just says, all right, I'll let you stay here, David, but if you're going to stay here, you're going to have to show yourself worthy. You're going to have to go out and fight and take care of me like you would have took care of Saul. So you're going to have to go out and take care of some business for me. And it says, and David said to Achish, after he'd been there for a while, and they'd been hanging around for a while and doing the things that they'd supposed to be doing, he says, if I have now found grace in thine eyes, let them, talking about his people, give me place in some town. He didn't even name the town. He didn't ask for a town particularly in the country, that I may dwell there. For why should thy servant dwell in the royal city with thee? In other words, it's great that you've put me in this city with you. And I'm looking around and everybody here is a Philistine except my guys. and you've got me up here pretty high on the pole with you, and pretty soon your people are going to get jealous. They're going to get to thinking that maybe that I'm changing your attitude about this or that or the other, and putting my views into your head. And so he says, maybe it'd be best if you move me out to some city somewhere where I won't be right under the nose of you and all the lords. Not that I'm not going to take care of you, King Achish, but some of your people might be getting jealous or upset thinking that you're giving me favor and taking care of this thing. So how about putting me out here in the skirts somewhere? And that way, you see, David's sitting here. When I get out in the skirts, I can do kind of a little bit like I want to. Every move I make, I ain't going to have somebody scrutinizing me. I'm going to be able to move around a little bit. My men will be able to move around. We'll be able to stretch out a little bit. He says, how about you put me out in some city, some place in some town, that I may dwell there? For why should I servant dwell in the royal city with thee, being that I'm not a Philistine, and I'm not really of your family? And Achish gave him Ziklag that day. Achish undoubtedly had him a little parliamental meeting, and he says, look, we got this old place over here called Ziklag. It's really, really, really close to the land of Judah. In fact, it is in the land of Judah. So why don't we let David go live right there on the fringe? Right there where we can keep an eye on him, right there where this is. But he can live there, him and his men, and that where he won't be influencing parliamental procedures and governmental procedures. And he'll have to check in with me from time to time, tell me where he's going and what he's doing and things that's going on. It says, and he gave him that day the Ziklag, pertaining to the kings of Judah and to this day. In other words, this didn't go back to the tribe of Judah, but the city of Ziklag went to every king of Judah from that day. The kings owned the city of Ziklag from here on out. And every king in the after David had something going on, or some housing or some summer home or some place where they went and stayed at Ziklag that they had for their own business. And the time that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months. Now, if you remember back when it said, and Samuel died, and it had been a year and 4 months. So sometime while David was in the land of the Philistines, Samuel died, and it's been a year and 4 months since the time Samuel died, and he was in the land of the Philistines, and Saul has been without priests. He's been without anything from God. He's been without any kind of the Lord talking to him or leading him or guiding him or anything else. So he's been gone a year and 4 months. Some commentators try to bring that down to different things, but I think the thing says here pretty plain he was gone for a year and 4 months. I'm sticking with that. And he was there in that country. And David and his men went up to invade the Geshurites and the Gezerites and the Amalekites. Y'all remember them. For those nations were of old the inhabitants of the land, as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. So everybody that was an enemy of God, everybody when the people came into the land and took over the land of Canaan when they came out of Egypt, were told to take care of these Geshurites and the Gezerites and the Amalekites. And even though they tried and they tried and they tried, if you read Joshua, it says, but they could not put them out of the land. For some reason, they fought against them. They tried to push them out, but these folks were pretty tough. They couldn't put them out of the land. So David says, the Lord has told us to get rid of these folks, so I'm going to keep making me some trips down there. You'd say, David's really picking a fight and all this, but David is really doing the work of God. God had told him, you get these people out of this land. He told the Israelites, get these people out of this land. Saul was letting these people stay. Everybody up till Saul had been letting these people stay, or what they could fight, they couldn't whoop. And David's saying, you know what? God said, let's get rid of them Gezerites and the Jeshurites and the Amalekites. And he says, let's get rid of them. So he went from time to time into the south of Judah, which is a little bit out of the sight of Achish. And it says, and he fought with those folks, and he killed those folks. fact, we're going to find a little bit more about what he did with them. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive. Now, what did God tell Saul to do with the Amalekites? Kill them all utterly. Don't leave a man or a woman or a sheep or a goat or anything over there alive. But David, he's going and doing that for two reasons. First of all, he had to kill them all or they'd go tell Achish what was happening. But firstly, because God had said, you kill them all right down to the last one. You don't leave a man, woman, child, or anything alive. So it says, and David went out of the land and left neither man nor woman alive. And he took away the sheep, and he took the oxen and the asses and the camels and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. He had to give Achish something, some little token of what he'd been doing, so Achish would see he was out doing something, and that Achish would be saying, look at my boy David, he's out fighting my enemies and taking care of. And these people probably were his enemies. But on the other hand, he's also fighting God's enemies and taking care of God's stuff. So he goes out and he brings back the sheep and the goats and everything else of their possessions and their apparel and everything else, and he splits that up and shares it with Achish. And Achish says, whither have you made a road today? In other words, where you been pushing? Where you been fighting? Where you been driving your forces on through to take care of them? Where have you made a road today? Because the people, he ain't out there making highways. He's out there taking his army and he's pushing through the lines until he takes over something. Where have you made a road today? And David said, against the south of Judah. Now the king Achish, if he doesn't inquire too hard, he's against the south of Judah. Boy, that's good. He's fighting them Israelites. He's killing some Israelites. He's taking care of some, he's making me happy. That boy's all for me and all for my country and all. He's all about this stuff. Because that's why he wants to take him to the battle in another two or three chapters. David's going to go fight with me. David's going to fight right beside me. He's going to go fight with me against Israel. At least that was his plan anyways. And he says, against the south of Judah and against the south of the Jerahmeelites and against the south of the Kenites. So we see here that we've got three groups of people. Kenites were the family of Jethro. So we don't think David's out there whipping Jethro's folks. But he's naming these names out there so that Achish is sitting here. Boy, that David is just fighting all these Israelites and he's whooping all these people in my name and taking care of things in my business. David, you just stay right there at Ziklag. You're a good old boy. We got you covered. And David saved neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath. In other words, David says, men, nobody gets away. Because if anybody that we're killing right now can get back to Gath, it's over for us. 600 men against the whole army of the Philistines, if they find out what David's doing, would be good stuff. He says, don't let one single person get away. Don't let one single person stay alive. He says, if they do, they'll go back to Gath, lest they should tell on us. Now, all through this book, there's been a tattletale. Have you noticed that? David has figured out people tell tales. David said the best way to keep anybody from telling the tale is not to give him the secret and say, hush up, but you just kill him and he can't talk about it. David finally has got wise. We're not telling nobody what we're doing. We're going to make sure anybody that knows what we're doing ain't allowed to tell it. He said, man, that's kind of rough. David saved neither man nor woman alive. He bring tidings to Gath, saying, lest they should tell on us, saying, so did David, and so will be his manner all the while he dwelleth in the country of the Philistines. In other words, he has never changed his mode of operation. David has always been an Israelite. David has always been fighting God's battles, and he has never changed. You may think he lives with you, King Achish. You may think he's on your side, King Achish, but he has never changed the way he does business. He is still fighting the battles of the Lord, and he's still taking care of God's business. He said, lest somebody go tell him and says, I've never changed. We know someone else has never changed. God has never changed. And Achish believed David, saying, he hath made this people Israel utterly to abhor him. So he's sitting there thinking, all the things he's doing, these Israelites must just hate him. He's out there killing their people. He's out there robbing them. He's stealing their sheep and their goats and their camels and all their stuff, taking their clothes away from them. Surely they cannot stand him. If they can't stand him, there's no way he can go back and be king. There's no way he can go back and be over Israel. Man, I've got David right where I want him. He has no choice but to fight for me. He has no choice but to take care of my business. Achish was really kind of proud of David. He said, man, I got this old Israel boy's a fighting machine, and he's all for me. He's out killing folks left and right just for me. Achish believed David, saying, he hath made his people to utterly abhor him, therefore he shall be my servant forever. In other words, I've got David right where I want him. David cannot go home. He can never leave the Philistines. He's got to be what I say do and do what I say do all the rest of his life. So there we are with David for the night, and David understands where he's at. David says, I know what I'm doing. I've been taking care of God's enemies in secret, although I know that if anybody ever goes back to Achish, it could be the end of us. But he also knows who's taking care of him. God's taking care of him. Now we're fixing to find out about the man who God has left. God has turned away from. Chapter 28, and we'll never finish 28 tonight, but that's okay. And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered the armies together for warfare and to fight with Israel. And Achish said unto David, know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to the battle, thou and thy men. He says, Achish called him a little army meeting together. He says, David, you've been hanging around over here. You've been fighting with them Israelites. You've been doing the stuff you're supposed to be doing for me. You've made those people utterly hate you. We're fixing to gather up our folks, and we're going to go fight with Israel. And I want you to know something, David. I want you to know assuredly. That means there's no doubt about it if it's up to me. Right. Assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to the battle, thou and thy men. And David's sitting here, oh boy. Now, up till now, this has been a pretty good show, but now I've got to make a decision. Now I'm going to be in a bind. I either have to fight with Achish, or I have to be behind Achish and fight against him. There's going to come a place here, if we go all the way into battle, that I've got to make a decision how I'm going to do this, how I'm going to be honorable in this thing and do God. He cannot fight with Israel. He cannot be Israel's king and fight against Israel. So he's got a dilemma. If I go with Achish, then it's possible I fight Israel. If I don't go with Achish, it's possible they'll fight with me and they'll kill us all. So he says, of assuredly thou will go. The king's pretty certain what's going to happen. And David said to Achish, surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do. In other words, you know how good a battle fighter I am. You know the things that I can do. Surely you know what kind of servant I am and all these things and how I fight and how my men fight and all those things. And Achish said to David, therefore will I make thee keeper of thine head forever. In other words, I'm not only going to let you go with me into the battle, but I'm going to let you fight right beside. You're going to protect me. You and your men are so good and so ferocious and so valiant that I want you and your 600 guys right around me. I want you protecting me. So now David's charge is to protect the king of the Philistines. It gets deeper and deeper. David's in a dilemma. Now Samuel was dead. If y'all ain't figured that out, Samuel's been dead now a year and 4 months. Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him, and we heard that later the last time, but then they took him and they prayed for him and they prayed about him and they mourned over him and they buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. So in Ramah they buried Samuel. And Saul had put away those in the land with familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. And if you know anything about what God said in Exodus, he says, if there's anybody got a familiar spirit or a witch, you kill them immediately. And then in Leviticus, it says you don't supposed to have suffer a witch to live. So God had some pretty serious thoughts about witches and stuff like that. This is the only thing at the beginning that Saul did that stayed by with what God said to do. He put all the witches out of the land. And the sad thing is, after he put all the witches out of the land, right here in his desperatest moments, he turns to a witch for counsel. That's probably the very thing that caused him to get killed. Because he totally went to the other side for counsel instead of standing up for what he said to do. And Saul had put all those that had familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. And I want you to understand that those folks are fake. Now, when I say they're fake, I'm saying that they have no power to predict future. And usually they're under the influence of Satan or Satan's demons or something like that. In fact, in Corinthians it says that the angels of darkness can become to look like the angels of light and even appear to be the angels of light. So when we see here that when he calls up Samuel later, you say, did he call up Samuel or did a demon come up appearing to be an angel of light or a prophet of God? We'll see. We'll talk about that. It says, but he put all these out of the land. And for a long time there, while he was in charge, while he was king, there were no. In fact, if there was a witch or a wizard or anything found, they would kill him. So Saul was doing pretty good there. But I see on TV that they got some new people in California that will tell you all about your secrets and your spirits and all the things. So I'm just going to sort of warn you, don't call California, because they ain't got nothing new for you to listen to, okay? He knows a lot of stuff. And don't call that lady down there in Florida, because she can't help you neither. In fact, if she could have helped you, she'd have figured out they were fixing to shut her down for not being able to tell the truth. You figure if you could see into the future, you'd know that was fixing to happen, right? But so don't call them wizards. And sister whatever name that has the cards down there at Gonzales, don't go see her. So I'm just trying to warn you up front, if you think that you can. And who reads the horoscopes? Don't say it. Don't raise your hand. Don't read your horoscope. That might be cute and that to figure out, but there's no validity to that stuff. That's people making up stuff that if you throw enough mud at the wall, you can make some of it stick sometime. So don't get hooked up on your horoscopes. Don't go see Sister What's-Her-Name with the tarot cards down there. And don't call California. And I'm sure there's other places I can mention. So anyways, all those put out of the land, because God says, if you want to know something, come to Him. In fact, God says, if I have somebody that tells you something's going to happen and it don't happen pretty quick, it's not of me. If you notice all through the Old Testament, when God says, this is fixed to happen, boom, it happened pretty quick. But when those other guys say something's going to happen, they go on and on. Well, he just ain't ready yet. Well, God makes this stuff happen. And the Philistines gathered themselves together, and they came and pitched at Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gilboa. And Saul, when he saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart greatly trembled. If you're fixing to go fight for the Lord, and the Lord ain't with you, that'd be a good time to be afraid. Especially when you look over there and you see all those Philistines, and they're everywhere. They cover the mountains and the hills and the valleys and everything else. It's not a time to have a spirit of fear, not a time to have a spirit of trembling. And you're sure hard to lead a bunch of men into battle when you're afraid to death. You got to have men thinking that you're fearless. You got to have men thinking that at least God's with you. He couldn't even get God to talk to him. He couldn't get God to even answer him. Let's go look and see what it says here. He was afraid, and his heart was greatly troubled, and Saul inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered him not. He says, God, what shall I do? What's going on? And God says, I am not going to talk to you, neither by dream nor by Urim, nor by prophet. So first of all, he wouldn't even come into his night visions. He wouldn't even give him the opportunity to get a glimpse of what might happen or whatever. God says, I'm not talking to you. And then if you remember, Saul just killed all the priests. The Urim and the Thummim went out with Abiathar and was with David. We know that Saul could not go to where David was and inquire of what's going on. And we don't figure that Saul set up another high priest after he just killed all those guys. Not me, buddy. I'm not going to be your high priest. You just killed all those. Wiped out a whole town over there because of what you did at Nob. He says, nope. Didn't do that. And then not only did he not do it with the dreams, nor with the Urim or Thummim, nor by prophet, Gad or Nathan or none of those guys walked over to Saul and said, hey, Saul, let me tell you what's going to happen. Not a single word from a prophet. Not a single word by spiritual means by a priest. And not even would God come to him in a dream. God had left him high and dry. When God says, I have rent the kingdom from you, I have found me somebody else to give it to, he means I have dropped you like a rock. And when God drops you like a rock, you can cry, you can beg, you can do whatever you want to, but God will not change his mind. Not even by prophet. Then said Saul unto his servants, God ain't going to speak to me. Tell you what we do. Seek me a woman. He didn't want a wizard. He wanted a woman. Seek me a woman with a familiar spirit. He's going to go all the way to the bottom. And if you'll notice that most of these places, no offense, ladies, where they have false teaching and false doings and all that, the women are in charge. No offense, but that just seems to be the way it appears. He says, seek me a woman with a familiar spirit, one that can do necromancy, and one that can bring up the dead, one who can get things to speak from the other side. Bring me a woman with a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said unto him, behold. It's amazing how quick they knew about this girl. They done killed all of them. They done run all of them out of town, but yet they knew exactly where to find one when they needed one. He said, behold, there is a woman that hath familiar spirits. In Endor. Brother Saul, you want us to find you somebody that can tell you what's happening? You want us to find somebody that can bring up the dead and talk like that? And this spirit seems to be like the spirit of ventriloquism, where she can make speaking come out of her stomach or out of somebody else. So she can make it appear like something else was speaking or talking to somebody. And it says here, we know where there's a woman with a familiar spirit. She's over there in the land of Endor. We need to go over there. And Saul disguised himself. First of all, Saul disguised himself because it was his rule that had all the wizards and all the witches killed in the country. He couldn't very well ride up to her house with all of his armor on and all of his royal attire on and drive up there with his chariot. First of all of his men would have said, what's wrong with Saul? Secondly, the woman would have said, oh no, I'm not a witch. I've never been a witch. You must have the wrong address. I mean, there ain't nothing in my... Look, you can look in the house. Ain't nothing here about witches. I'm not a witch. So he had to disguise himself. He had to make it look like he was somebody else. So he disguised himself and put on other raiment. Probably like a regular guy, peasant or somebody like that. And the two men with him, now you know they had to take their armor and stuff off too. And some commentators think that maybe Abner went with him, but I can't see him taking Abner, the general of his army, and both of them going to see this witch. I think Abner probably stayed there at the army, and he took maybe two higher ranking guys, but both of those guys probably had to camouflage themselves and put on different attire and put their soldier stuff to the side. It says, and they changed their raiment, and the men went with him, and it came to the woman by night. Men prefer darkness because their deeds are evil. You see, there's a reason you go to witches and do things at night, for nobody can see you. When you're doing things in the light, walk in the light as I am in the light, as God says. He wasn't walking in the light. He was walking in total darkness. He was letting darkness lead him and guide him and direct him. So these guys came to this woman by night. And he said, I pray thee, I'm begging you, I need you to, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up, whom I shall name unto thee. He didn't just come right out and say, look, I need you to pull up Samuel. That would have been a big clue. You want me to pull up Samuel? You must be Saul. They're the only person I want to hear from Samuel. He says, pull up the one that I want you to pull up. He walked right in there and says, look, I'm going to name somebody here in a minute, and I need you to bring them on up. Now, I understand that we have the verses that say it's the point of man wants to die, and after that, the judgment and stuff like that. But we do know that there were several people that Jesus gave life back to. They died. They were healed, gave back to life, but they died again. I understand that too. And they did face a judgment after the final death, or they will face a judgment after the final death. But it says, pull me up a spirit of him whom I shall name unto thee. And the woman said unto him, behold, thou knowest that's what Saul hath done. In other words, wait a minute, guy. I know you ain't no stranger in Israel. You know that Saul has put all the witches out of Israel. Saul has put all the wizards out of Israel. You're coming into my house asking me to conjure up some dead guy who you haven't named yet. And don't you know that if I did that, Saul would surely put me to death? Do you understand? I know what the rules are. I know what Saul has said. Do you not know what Saul is? You're asking me to do something to get me killed. Behold, thou knowest what Saul has done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits, and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? In other words, you're trying to trick me. You want me to either really pull somebody up or even act like I'm pulling somebody up so that you can report me to Saul and you can have me killed. Man, you're trying to get over on me. You're trying to trick me here. You're trying to get me killed here. If that's the case, that ain't happening. I ain't falling for that trick. You ain't going to just simply say something to me and I'm just going to fall right into it, go hocus pocus, and here it is. You got me up the wrong tree. And Saul swear unto her. Now that would have scared me. Saul, who just killed all of God's priests. Saul, who just hated David without a cause, is going to swear to some witch. He swear to her. Saul swear to her by the Lord. And wait a minute. The Lord who has rejected you. The Lord who won't even talk to you. The Lord who won't even have a prophet come to you. You're going to swear to this witch by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, whew, there shall no punishment happen unto thee for this thing. Now wait a minute. I'm in disguise. I'm a regular old guy, and I'm going to say, as the Lord liveth, I have the power and the authority to make sure nothing happens to you if you do this. She's starting to put two and two together here. She said, who can grant that kind of a request that I won't get put to death for doing this thing? Only the king. Only the king has the power to say, you do this thing and I'll pardon you. On the other hand, this is the one king who's never done anything right yet, and you're going to trust him to pardon you if you do it. She's between a rock and a hard place right there. As the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, who shall I bring up unto thee? All right, if I do this thing, who is it you want? Who is it you'd like to talk to? Who is it that's so important that you see right now that you need me to do this thing? And he said, bring me up Samuel. Now wait a minute. God's not talking to him. God's not letting him have a dream. God's not sending him a live prophet So why in the world would God allow Samuel to leave paradise and go back up and talk to Saul? You say, huh? Well, we're fixed to see it right here, right? I'm not sure if we are or not. But it says here, and the woman said, who shall I bring up to thee? And he said, bring me up Samuel. And when the woman saw Samuel, now here we go, possibly one of them demons putting on the character of a messenger of light or something to that, but it didn't say Saul saw Samuel. It said when the woman saw Samuel. When the woman, she hadn't even started conjuring good yet, some people would say. She hadn't even started doing her hocus pocus yet, and all of a sudden she looks over there and there is Samuel, or the appearance of Samuel. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice, woohoo! I ain't even started yet, and there he is, with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? I know who you are. I know exactly who you are. Why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. You came here because God won't speak to you. You came here because living prophets won't speak to you. You came here to conjure up Samuel because you need Saul. You're thinking that maybe Saul will give you something that God won't. Samuel has done everything God ever said do the way God said do it. And now Saul's sitting here, well, if I could get Samuel to come up here, he'll give me some good advice on how to do these things, how to work this stuff out. You have deceived me. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice, and she said, thou hast deceived me, for thou art Saul. And the king said unto her, be not afraid. Be not afraid. For what sawest thou? In other words, hey, I know you saw something. You wouldn't have screamed like that or hollered like that if you didn't just see something. Maybe she was in the other room when this started happening or what have you. She was in the other place and she saw something. And the woman said unto Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. I saw gods ascending out of the earth. I saw things coming out of the earth. What do you think's in the earth? Where's God at? I don't think God's in the earth. So if she saw gods coming out of the earth, it wasn't God. It wasn't the God. It wasn't holy God. It might have been the devil and his demons coming out of the earth, but they were all getting ready to camp around the building there. They were all going to act like the angels of light or the messengers of light. They were going to look like the preachers of truth when they were preachers of lies. She says, and the king said, be not afraid. What did you see? And she said, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. And he said unto her, what form is he of? What did he look like? How was he made? What was his stature? She said, an old man cometh up. Now you reckon that the devil don't know what Samuel looked like? I'm serious. I mean, if the devil wanted to have a demon go up there and, oh, it's your turn, you go up there and be Samuel. You don't reckon the devil could have a demon go do that? Absolutely. You think that Samuel's going to leave the bosom of Abraham? What does it say about the bosom of Abraham? There's a great gulf between us, and no man can come from my side to yours, neither can anybody go. Now, if Jesus said that, I don't think she's conjuring up the Samuel out of the bosom of Abraham. Even though it all looks that way, kind of runs that way. An old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived. Didn't say he knew, he perceived. It was Samuel. And he stooped with his face to the ground, and he bowed himself. In other words, as soon as he came in the presence of this person, he fell flat on his face. He was listening to what's being said, but he wasn't actually looking up, analyzing, checking this thing out to make sure it was a perfect whatever, if it was Samuel. And Samuel said to Saul, or the one acting like Samuel, perceived to be Saul, Samuel, "Why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up?" First of all, whoever this is has got to make Saul think like he was put out. What are you doing bothering me? Don't you know I'm down there, kicked back, with all the other little angels playing their violins and stuff, enjoying the afterlife, and you're going to drag me back up here to talk to me about God stuff? He says, "Why have you disquieted me to bring me up?" And Saul answered, "I am sore distressed. I'm in a pickle. I need some help. For the Philistines make war against me, and God is departed from me." And Saul's sitting here, or the thing sitting here. Now, if he was truly, truly Samuel, he would have said, "God's departed from you, right? The prophets ain't talking to you, right? You can't even get a good dream going on, right? Why do you think I'm going to help you? Why would I even come close to talking to you if God has forsaken you like you know He has? I know you have if I'm really Samuel. I'm not going to go again," because God had already told Samuel, "You quit praying for him way back yonder." So if God has told Samuel he has direct orders from God, he's not going to violate that and come up and say, "Well, Brother Saul, let me tell you what you need to do." That would make him a Balaam. And we know what happened to Balaam. And Samuel is not a Balaam. Samuel is a prophet of God right down to the end of it. "God has departed from me and answers me no more, neither by prophet," who's a prophet, "nor by dream, nor have I called, therefore have I called thee that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do." You know, see, he didn't even say anything about the Urim or the Thummim there. Because he would never look Samuel in the eye and say, "You know, I killed all the priests." So he don't even mention that right there. He just says, "God won't talk to me in a dream. He won't send no prophets. And oh, by the way, I killed all the priests, you know, your buddies there at the school. And I have called thee that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do." Then said Samuel, "Wherefore then dost thou answer me? Seeing the Lord is departed from thee and has become thine enemy." In other words, why in the world did you want to call up a Samuel who's going to do everything that God says because the Lord has departed from you? He has become your enemy, and you're going to go to his man and ask direction. How do I whip God? How do I get around this thing that God might back on my side? What do I need to do here? Well, way back yonder, he had opportunity to repent, and he refused. Way back yonder. He has become mine enemy. We don't want God to be an enemy. He has become his enemy. "And the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me. The Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David." Now, we know that the demons know that. We know that the devil knows that. Even the devil's got enough sense to say, "Look, dude, you blew it. God has rent the kingdom out of your hand. God has taken this thing away from you. And the Lord hath done to him and spake unto him and rent the kingdom out of his hand and had given to his neighbor, even David, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord." Now, what did God say to do to witches? Kill them all. What did he say to do to wizards? Kill them all. And now, what's he doing? He has gone to a wizard to get information on how to handle God. Was that the sin of witchcraft is, the sin of disobedience is the sin of witchcraft? I'm not quoting that wrong, but that's what it says. It says, because thou obeyedest not the voice of the Lord. When you were told to go kill the Amalekites, you refused. When you were told to go do other things, you refused. When you were told to do the right thing, you refused. Because thou obeyedst not the voice of the Lord, nor executed his fierce wrath upon the Amalekites, therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. In other words, you're not going to get any reprieve from God. You disobeyed God, and disobeying God is the sin of witchcraft. And now you have not only done the sin of witchcraft, you have gone to a witch for help. So not only did he disobey, but he went to the actual witch herself. Moreover, I hate the word moreover, that means there's more coming. Wasn't bad enough you did what you did, but moreover. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines. In other words, because of you. Because of you, Saul, because you would not obey the Lord. Not only is there something going to happen to you, not only is there going to something happen to your children, but there's also going to something happen to Israel too. Because of your wickedness, because of your ungodliness, Israel is going to suffer because. Moreover, the Lord will deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow, now I don't think that this battle may not have happened tomorrow, but it was probably pretty close thereafter. And tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. Now, I don't think Jonathan is going to be in the same place Saul went. Unless he's meaning tomorrow you're going to be dead, like I'm dead, maybe. But unless you did godly stuff, godly men go to heaven, or saved men go to heaven, and ungodly men go someplace else. So if he meant tomorrow you're going to be with me, he wasn't talking about being in paradise. But if he's meant being dead, graveyard dead, like the rest of them, they're all going to be dead likewise. He says, moreover, Israel will fall into the hands of the Philistines, and tomorrow thou and thy sons be with me. And we know Mephibosheth didn't, or Jonathan's son Mephibosheth didn't get killed there. And the Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. And we do know that a few days from now, Saul commits suicide or falls on his sword and asks his armor bearer to finish him off. Two of his sons die right there and get their heads cut off and they get hung up. And we know that Jonathan gets killed in this same battle. And the Israelites get scattered all over the place, don't know which way to go for a while. All because of the disobedience of Saul. All these things fall into the hand of Philistines. And we're going to have to take this back up next week. We're going to see how Saul falls down in front of this apparition or drawn up man and humbles himself to this person. All the strength was zapped out of him. We're going to take over right there around verse 20 there next week. Brother Brennan, would you dismiss us, please?